Well, we should be able to finish this chapter up. At least we have to. Well, this is Friday, right? So I guess the test is Monday. All right. Well, we're on slide 21. And the purple thing you see here in the cartoon represents what is called an antigen-presenting cell, or an APC, which is a little bit confusing terminology because actually any cell with a nucleus, which is almost any cell in your body, what's an exception to that, by the way? Red blood cells, erythrocytes, are enucleated. But any nucleated cell actually can act as an antigen-presenting cell, even though the ones we call, even though only certain ones are actually called antigen-presenting cells, which is kind of nonsensical. But the phrase gives away what these things are doing. They are presenting antigens, right? Well, they're the ones that we actually call antigen-presenting cells, because they kind of specialize in this, present a foreign antigen by putting that antigen on its surface. Well, the ones that we don't actually call antigen-presenting cells, any nucleated cell, which is acting as an APC, does the same thing. It's just that the antigen that it puts on its surface is usually a self-antigen. All right, so any nucleated cell will put a little piece of what's inside it on the surface. And usually in a healthy cell, it's a molecule that is supposed to be there. And that's what I mean by a self-antigen. And those will just be ignored by the cells that are going around looking for antigen-presenting cells. But if it's your own cell and it's somehow defective, or if it's been infected, it's your cell, but it's been infected and there's a bacterium inside it, maybe, then in the course of putting random molecules on the surface, it can put something that actually isn't supposed to be there. And that's why the rest of the cells of the body can also act as an APC that can lead to an immune response. All right, but in general, what's happening here, this is specifically for one of the specializing antigen-presenting cells. And by the way, there's different kinds of cells that act as antigen-presenting cells, but the main kinds are B cells, certain B cells, macrophages, and also dendritic cells, which are very similar to B cells, but they're found in the body lining, skin, and mucous membranes. Anyway, notice what we have happening here. There is phagocytosis of an antigen. So a macrophage, of course, does this, right? It goes around eating things that aren't supposed to be there. Once inside, and that's what antigen refers to. Antigen is just a general term that means some part of a molecule, or it could be an entire molecule, that doesn't belong there. It's non-self. All right, so when this antigen is brought in by phagocytosis, of course, that produces a little vesicle that now contains the antigen. That's how phagocytosis works in general, right? The lysosome that is already in the, you know, lysosomes are organelles that are already in the cell. A lysosome fuses with this phagosome, which is the name given for the vesicle created by phagocytosis and that contains the antigen. The reason those two fuse together is so that what is carried in the lysosome inside, which are digestive enzymes, can then be exposed to the antigen itself. And this is a way to destroy the thing that could hurt you, right? It's digested. So the combination of the phagosome and the lysosome, as you see, is called a phagolysosome. All right? So this breaks down the thing so that it can't hurt you. And most of it is just broken down into molecular subunits and recycled, even though it came from maybe a bacterium, right? Once you break it down into the bare monomers, it doesn't matter what organism it's from. It can't hurt you anymore. It can just be reused to make new proteins, for instance. But some of that debris is what gets presented as an antigen on the surface of the cell. That's what's happening at 6. So processed antigen fragments, not the entire molecules necessarily anymore, are put into the groove that's on a special molecule on the surface of these APCs, and that special protein, which is in blue here, C-shaped blue thing right here, is called the major histocompatibility complex protein. Okay? And I mentioned that a little bit before. So that's what MHC stands for, major histocompatibility complex. Well, the actual MHC, the complex itself, refers to DNA, but they code for, that complex code for proteins, right? So that's why this thing is called an MHC protein. So that is on the surface of the cell basically at all times on an antigen-presenting cell. What happens when an antigen gets engulfed, or when a foreign particle gets engulfed and broken down into antigen fragments, those antigen fragments get stuck onto the MHC protein, and that's how it presents it on its outside. So an antigen is... The reason antigens spur an immune response is because antigens can be recognized by antibodies, right? Or by T-cell receptors, which are very similar to antibodies. But it's not the entire antigen that actually gets recognized by antibodies and by T-cell receptors. It's really just a part of that overall molecule or particle. And so the part that actually gets recognized by the specific antibody somewhere is called the epitope. And that's why it says it here. Antigen fragments, in parentheses, epitopes. It's the epitope that actually gets presented on the outer surface of the cell. That's antigen presentation. And that's the job of an antigen-presenting cell. Now, it wouldn't make sense to do that if you didn't also have a cell that's able to recognize that you're presenting, that the antigen-presenting cell is presenting that antigen. It has to be presenting it to some other cell, in other words. And that some other cell is a type of T cell. We're on slide 22 now. So the larger cell on the top is the antigen-presenting cell, whatever kind it is. Okay, now... the smaller cell is a T cell. There are different kinds of T cells, though, and two kinds of T cells, either one of two kinds of T cells, can be involved in recognizing these presented antigens by the APCs. And those two subclasses of T cells that recognize these presented antigens are cytotoxic T cells, which are T sub C in abbreviation form, or helper T cells, T sub H. All right, now, the difference here, well, there's a couple differences. Cytotoxic T cells, as their name implies, are able to directly kill cells. So that's part of their function. But cytotoxic T cells are also the cells that recognize antigens being presented by all of the antigen-presenting cells that aren't actually called antigen-presenting cells. Just the cells of your own body that are nucleated, that are doing this routinely, and that are usually just presenting something that should be there and therefore get ignored. Okay? It's the cytotoxic T cells that interact with those cells presenting antigens. The ones that specialize in antigen presentation, which are those B cells and the dendritic cells and the macrophages, Those ones get recognized by helper T cells. And there's different proteins involved in these two different kinds of T cells, helper or cytotoxic. That's why that's why there is such a division of labor. But here it shows you the general scheme of what's going on here. So the same thing basically happens whether it's a cytotoxic T cell or a helper T cell recognizing the antigen that's being presented by the APC. That's why it says TC or TH. And notice the four steps here. Antigen recognition first, co-stimulation, clonal selection, and then attack. Okay? So the antigen recognition just consists of either the helper T cell or the cytotoxic T cell, depending on what the APC is, recognizing that there is an antigen being presented that should not be in the body. And by recognizing it, I mean there is a particle on the surface of that T cell that is acting just like an antibody. It's very similar to an antibody. This particle, which in this cartoon is the yellow thing. Oh no, the yellow thing's the antigen. Actually, it doesn't show the detail of what's actually recognizing that antigen. But what fits complementarily to that antigen and that allows that T cell to recognize the antigen is of something that's very similar to an antibody, but it's not called an antibody. It's called a T cell receptor. That's what I was talking about before. And there are millions of different kinds of T cell receptors in your body, which means there are millions of different kinds of cytotoxic T cells, millions of different kinds of helper T cells. Each individual cell is able to recognize only one type of antigen. Okay? So when an antigen-presenting cell is presenting the epitope for a certain antigen, it has to be just the right kind of helper T cell or cytotoxic T cell that can come around and say, oh, I see this shouldn't be here. But since it's in the circulation, that happens eventually. All right? What I'm saying here is that most TC cells and TH cells will just ignore this APC. It has to be the right kind that recognizes it. When that happens, though, there's a docking between the two cells, the APC and the T cell. Well, that's not enough. The body wants to make sure that it actually is an antigen from a foreign body, or from something non-self. So that's why you have co-stimulation. In order for the rest of the stuff below that to happen, after the T cell recognizes the epitope, it also has to form a second link with the APC via this red protein, this co-stimulation protein. And this is a little bit analogous to looking at a face and saying, okay, you don't belong here. But just to be sure, let me also check your ID. That's what the co-stimulation protein is doing. If that's successful, then you have what happens below this. Clonal selection refers to making a clone of that particular type of T cell. Okay, now a clone, we use that word to mean an individual that's identical to another individual. We use that sense of the term all the time. But clone, in cellular terms, doesn't refer to a single individual. A clone refers to a big group of identical cells. Okay? So that whole group of identical cells is one clone. Well, remember, I said there are millions of different kinds of T cells, but only one kind is able to recognize this particular antigen. That's the one that gets stimulated into undergoing mitosis over and over to make a clone of just that type of T cell. That's what clonal selection refers to. All the millions of other kinds of T cells with different T cell receptors aren't affected by this. So they just stay small in number, right? Your T cells are just randomly created. So that's why they have all different kinds of T cell receptors. And unless that particular antigen that they can recognize happens to be put into your body, they're just going to do nothing. Just exist, but not divide and create new ones of their copies of themselves. Those ones that have not encountered the particular antigen that they're able to recognize are called naive cells. But this is not a naive cell anymore because it recognized what the APC presented to it. Okay, so that's clonal selection, but notice that there's two different kinds of cells produced in this clone, even though they're genetically identical. There's functionally two kinds of cells here. Most of them are going to be effector cells, which you see here. Some of them will be memory cells. The effector cells are for getting busy immediately to deal with the problem at hand, the invading microorganism, whatever it is, that carries that antigen. The memory cells are going to hang around so that if there is a second invasion of your body later on of that same stuff, they'll already be on hand. This is the essence of memory in adaptive immunity, the fact that cells hang around and keep a record of what you have been exposed to so that you don't have to go through the whole process again that takes longer to do. And this is why on second exposure you don't usually even notice any symptoms, because this army of memory cells that are on hand takes care of the problem immediately. All right? And the fact that these are just a specific to a one kind of antigen, that's the essence of the specificity of adaptive immunity. You have memory and specificity. The effector cells, though, go on to, if they are cytotoxic T cells, they go on to actually directly kill enemy cells. That's the essence of a cytotoxic T cell. They're the only kind of T cell that can actually kill other cells directly. If it's a helper T cell, then it's going to release molecules, these little purple dots, which are classified, notice, as interleukins, meaning communication between leukocytes, white blood cells. And so that brings on all these things that are happening in the purple box. It recruits other kinds of white blood cells to do the job of dealing with the problem at hand, more or less. Okay? But notice that inflammation is included down there, which is a non-specific process, but it's being brought on as part of this specific immunity. Okay, now to 23. This is a helper T cell at work here, so not a cytotoxic T cell, and therefore the cell that it is interacting with is one of these ones that we officially call an antigen-presenting cell, namely a B cell or a dendritic cell or a macrophage. But we've already gone through all of that in the previous slide. If it's a helper T cell, though, notice that the release of chemicals can lead to three basic things here at the bottom. So these chemicals that are being released by the helper T cells, these are acting in a paracrine fashion, right? These are paracrine signals, not hormones. They're acting locally. But there's different kinds of them. For instance, macrophage activating factor. That is a signal, a specific signal that helper T cells can release, and it tells you exactly what it does. It spurs on the action of macrophages. It gets them going, tells them, eat this stuff, basically. But there's other cytokines as well, and notice that it leads to leukocyte chemotaxis. What does that mean? These chemicals, some of these chemicals that are being released are luring certain white blood cells to that area. They're being attracted. That's chemotaxis, is movement toward a chemical or away from a chemical, but in this case, as a result of a chemical in general. But in this case, it's positive chemotaxis, meaning it's moving toward the chemical. This is a way to get white blood cells of other types into the area so that they can defend. And so that is all really part of nonspecific defense. Interleukins, when they are released, and other cytokines, that can lead to clonal selection of B cells We just looked at clonal selection of T cells, but clonal selection also goes on in B cells. And B cells, just like T cells, are specific. There are millions of different kinds of B cells because there are trillions of possible antibodies that you could make. You don't end up making all of them, but you make many millions within your own body. The reason that they're different from one cell to the from one B cell to the next is because they produce different kinds of antibodies, just like different kinds of T cells produce different kinds of T cell receptors. Antibodies and T cell receptors are produced in a similar way, but they act in different cells. They're the things that actually make that cell specific for one type of antigen. Well, what do B cells do if they, as part of their maturation process? B cells get transformed into other kinds of cells that we talked about. What are those other kinds of cells? They're cells that I said mature in the lymph nodes. Well, they are lymphocytes already, because B cells are a type of lymphocyte. But specifically, B cells transform into plasma cells. Okay? Plasma cells are B cells later on in their development that specialize in a certain function. What do plasma cells specialize in? Creation of antibodies, exactly. So each plasma cell, which there are millions of different kinds of, because they come from the millions of different kinds of B cells, each individual plasma cell is just a factory for producing copy after copy of that same kind of antibody that it's able to make, that it's genetically programmed to make. All right, and the same is happening with the millions of other kinds of B cells. So since plasma cells, which come from B cells and which are produced as part of this clonal selection of B cells, since these plasma cells produce and secrete antibodies, those are antibodies that are on their own now. They're no longer part of a cell, and that's why this is listed as humoral immunity. These antibodies are released into the plasma and are circulating in your blood, but they're no longer part of a B cell. There are other B cells, though, that have their antigens connected to their surface still. So remember, there's many kinds of different B cells. Interleukins from these helper T cells can also cause clonal selection of cytotoxic T cells, and that's part of cellular immunity because cells are directly involved now, right? When an antibody is released from a plasma cell, there's no longer a cell directly involved. That's why it's humoral immunity. But a cytotoxic T cell is directly killing another cell. That's cellular immunity. 24 shows you the clonal selection of B cells. Pretty similar, but different kind of cell, right? These are B lymphocytes. And a moment ago I said that some B cells have their antibodies connected to them still on their surface, pointing outward. That's what we see up here. And these are three of the millions of different kinds of B cells that your body can produce. What's different about them is just that the type of antibodies that each one produces. Each one produces one kind of antibody, but many copies of it. And you can see that in cartoon form from the fact that every one of the antibodies on the same cell has the same shape. Okay? Now, how is it that the body... Well, I'll get into that in a minute. This just shows you three for simplicity. But notice that the antigen, whatever that foreign particle is, represented by the greenish spheres here, that does not fit into the antibody surface on most of the B cells. It has to be just the right kind of antibody, and therefore just the right kind of B cell for that antigen to be recognized by the antibody. The others just ignore it. But that's what's happening in antigen recognition, as is self-explanatory. Antigen presentation, then, involves a helper T cell, not a cytotoxic T cell, because the cytotoxic T cells are doing the same thing with the other kinds of cells presenting antigens, right? The ones that aren't actually called APCs. APCs, remember, are B cells, dendritic cells, and macrophages. In this case, a B cell. So that's why this is a helper T cell. Same thing is going on that we've already talked about. Interleukins get released from the helper T cell as a result of this docking between the APC and the helper T cell, and that leads to clonal selection of B cells. Just exactly that type of B cell, not the millions of other kinds. So once again, you have a whole big clone, all genetically identical, made of just that type of B cell, most of which will develop into plasma cells, whose job it is to make many, many copies and secrete those of antibodies into the plasma. That's what you have on the bottom. These are free antibodies, no longer bound to B cells. But some of them will stay behind and become memory cells to give you a memory of that invader. All right, so you see the difference between B cells that have their antibodies on their surface still for the purpose of initially recognizing whatever it is that shouldn't be there, and plasma cells which develop from that kind of B cell after it has already recognized the antigen, so that just that right type of antibody can be produced en masse now and secreted into the plasma to protect you without the help of any cells anymore. That's just humoral immunity. Does that make sense? Okay. Go ahead.
So, helper T cells only bind to those specific three APCs, and cytotoxic T cells bind to all the other ones?
Right. Helper T cells bind only to the ones that we actually bother calling antigen-presenting cells. And cytotoxic T cells can recognize antigens on all the other nucleated cells. Okay, 25 shows you a comparison microscopically of a B cell and a plasma cell. Now, keep in mind, plasma cells develop from B cells. So this is kind of two snapshots at different times of development. The striking difference, as you see here, is that the plasma cell, which is later on in development, comes from the B cell, has a hell of a lot more rough endoplasmic reticulum in it. And in fact, in cartoon form, you even saw that in the previous slide, as I showed you instead. All this pink stuff is endoplasmic reticulum. So the plasma cells feature a very, very extensive not only an endoplasmic reticulum, but specifically rough endoplasmic reticulum. Now, why does this make sense? What is the job of rough endoplasmic reticulum in general in any given cell? Protein what? Protein modification, right. Protein synthesis involves ribosomes, right? And many proteins have to not only be built, but once they're built, be modified thereafter. Well, the ones that need help or need modification are the ones that, while they're being built, get sent to the rough endoplasmic reticulum. That ribosome that they're being built on, that whole thing gets moved over to the surface of the rough endoplasmic reticulum, and the polypeptide that's being built gets strung into the lumen of the rough endoplasmic reticulum so that modification can take place in that organelle. So that's, in general, what rough ER does. This happens in a plasma cell to a huge extent because the job of this plasma cell is to make many, many, many copies of the same kind of antibody. So it's an antibody factory specializing in one specific type of antibody of trillions that are possible. All right. That's why you need so much endoplasmic reticulum, though. And it's a plasma cell at this point because it's going to release those antibodies. It's not going to keep them on its surface. So let's go to 26 and look at a closer view of an antibody in general. This Y-shaped thing overall is a single antibody. And this is the general shape of all these antibodies that I said you have trillions of possible versions of. What makes them specific and what makes them different from each other is the tips of the diagonal parts of this Y shape, which are the yellow parts in this cartoon, the ones that are labeled as variable parts. Okay? Now, what, as far as macromolecules are concerned, what are antibodies? What kind of macromolecules? Yes, they're proteins. It's actually multiple polypeptides, but the different parts that you see here are different polypeptides, but it's a multimeric protein. Okay? The variable part, well, let me just start that over. There are two major halves, two halves to the thing, right, which are the same as each other. Notice the right and left mirror image. But each half has a constant region and a variable region. Now, the constant regions are the same for all antibodies in that same person. So the trillions of possibilities, those would all have the same constant region. That's, of course, not what makes them specific. And it's not the part that actually recognizes the antigen. The part that recognizes the antigen is the variable region. But there is a heavy chain and a light chain in each half, a longer polypeptide and a shorter polypeptide. Each one of them has a constant region and a variable region, but they're arranged so that the variable regions of the light and heavy chain are both at the tip. And they provide the particular surface, represented by this concave thing at the end, that can interact chemically and recognize one specific antigen type. Or it could be actually more than one antigen, but they have to be very similar so that they fit in there. Okay? So a single antibody, which has these two halves, can actually simultaneously bind to two of the same type of antigen. And some antibodies exist just in monomer form like this, just in other words, just one of what you see here, one Y shape. Or you can get two of them together to form a dimer so that they would have four places they could attach to of the same thing. Or even pentamers, five of these Ys facing outwardly, each which with two recognition sites. So a pentamer can actually has 10 places, all identical, that can simultaneously hang on to the same kind of antigen. But what I was going to say before, and I waited until this slide, is, or what I was going to ask is, how can it be that there are trillions of possibilities for a protein within one human? What is the number of protein-coding genes in a human, approximately? Right, about 20,000. That was one of the big surprises of the Human Genome Project that took 10 years to do. We thought there were going to be a lot more genes than that. Turns out we don't have nearly as many protein-coding genes as we thought, about 20,000. And by far, most of those have nothing at all to do with antibodies, right? A big chunk of them are code for enzymes, which is why you have so many different kinds of enzymes. But structural proteins, transport proteins, neurotransmitters, all kinds of genes, all kinds of proteins coded for by these different protein-coding genes. There's only a tiny number of genes among those 20,000 that code for antibodies. But even if all 20,000 were coding for antibodies, that would still allow you to make only 20,000 different kinds of antibodies, which is effectively zero compared to trillions, right? How is it that you can have so many then? Well, the answer is that these are special genes, the genes that code for antibodies, and pretty much the same system is used for the genes that code for T cell receptors. They're special compared to other genes because they actually have their DNA get mixed up within the development of that single cell that they're part of. Okay, so all cells of the body start out with the same DNA, whether they're blood cells or spleen cells or whatever, right? All your cells, all the cells that have a DNA, which are all your nucleated cells, they all have the same DNA except for mutations that have occurred here and there in your body, right? But the cells that are created from hematopoiesis, the blood cells, well, they have the same DNA starting out as well, only the genes that are responsible for making either antibodies or T-cell receptors are turned on in these cells. And your liver cells don't have those genes turned on. They're just not using them. But B-cells and T-cells are using those genes because they need to make, in the case of B-cells, antibodies, or in the case of T-cells, T-cell receptors. In the process of turning those genes on, within one cell, the DNA in those genes is actually scrambled. Parts are cut, the order is reversed, and then they're put back together. Very much like shuffling a deck of cards. All right? And there's trillions of ways that that can be, which is why there is trillions of possibilities. But that shuffling occurs just once for each cell in its developmental history. And then it's fixed. It's no longer shuffled again, which is why once that shuffling occurs, that B cell can produce only that type of antibody. The shuffling is what determines the variable region. And it's totally random. It might be that the variable region corresponds to something that doesn't even exist. It's just random, a random shape of that variable function, region. But this is what protects you from things that might be brand new, that never did exist before, that just came into existence. You would still be able to have an antibody that would recognize it just because there are so many possibilities. All right? But the naive cells, and this is why you have millions of different ones, the naive cells are just not going to do anything if they never encounter the antigen that they can specifically recognize. If they do, that's when you have clonal selection and all the stuff that we saw. And that's why your body will have a record of that particular type of antigen having invaded you. And will have an army on hand to deal with it. 27. We can see using blood cells as an example, that some antibodies, like I said, can form pentamers. This is a pentamer, meaning a five-part structure. So it's five of those Ys, and each Y has two binding sites. Well, this is how agglutination works, which is what makes blood transfusion mismatches dangerous. Antibodies clump together multiple foreign blood cells if you give the person the wrong type. And that clumping together of the blood cells is agglutination. That's what can be so bad for you. It's not always pentamers, though. Like I said, there's different kinds of antibodies that form different sizes of, you know, some of them are just monomers, some of them are dimers, some of them are pentamers. But they're also structurally classified into different classes of immunoglobulins. Antibodies in general are not only proteins. They specifically are globulins, which are a type of protein, right? They're not the only globulins. There's plenty of other globulins in the plasma doing other things, right? But the globulins that are antibodies are therefore called immunoglobulins because that's what they're functioning for, immunity. And that's what the IG stands for. There's different kinds of immunoglobulins or antibodies, though. IgM, IgA, so on. 28 is the last slide, I think. And this just shows you the effect of having memory of a prior exposure to an antigen. The primary response here refers to when you first get exposed to a particular antigen. And therefore, the cells that are specific for that antigen, before that exposure, they're naive cells, right? They haven't, there's no memory yet. By the way, on the graph here, the y-axis is serum antibody titer. A titer is just a way of expressing concentration. It gets its name because you determine it through titration. But anyway, a titer is, you can think of as concentration. So the higher on the graph, the more of those type of antibodies, or immunoglobulins, M and G in this case, there are in the plasma. Well, it's effectively zero when you haven't been exposed to that yet, because you might only have one of that particular type of cell. Of the trillions that are possible, you might only have one cell circulating in your blood that has the right kind of antibody to recognize that antigen. But once it does recognize it, then you have that response that we talked about, and which is why you have an increase in antibodies all of a sudden. That's the primary response. Now, it's a little too slow to keep you from not having any side effects, which is why you either die or you go through the course of the disease and suffer the consequences. But if you survive, then you have those memory cells on hand, and if you get re-exposed, notice how quick and how high the titer gets on the second exposure. That's the secondary response. That's why memory is so important. So the two main things about adaptive immunity is that it's specific and that there is memory. All right, as opposed to the non-specific resistance that we talked about, which happens the same way every time, no matter how many times you're exposed. And that should do it.